Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and this is a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. The programme was originally broadcast in 1981, and the presenter was Roy Plumley.
I'm delighted that our castaway this week is Her Royal Highness Princess Margaret, Countess of Snowdon. Ma'am, have you a big collection of records?
Yes, quite.
Have you kept your old 78?
Oh, yes, they're all very carefully preserved.
They're very heavy, of course. You've got them down in the cellar.
I have them up in the attic, actually.
How old were you when you began to be interested in music, when you began piano lessons?
Well, I wasn't interested in lessons, but I began when I was about five.
You were put to it?
Yes.
When did you begin to take an interest?
When I was about 15, I suppose.
When you had got past the...
Well, when my fingers got strong, I think.
Do you play frequently for your own pleasure?
Well, sometimes, just for singing.
Do you compose yourself?
Oh, no. Well, I have composed one or two things, but very slight.
What, songs?
Yes.
Did you find it very difficult to choose just eight records that may have to last a long, long time?
Yes, I found it very difficult indeed.
How did you go about it? Did you have any kind of plan?
Yes, I thought that one ought to have perhaps something of every category.
What's the first category? What's the first record?
Well, I suppose I thought back to my childhood and that I thought of the practically the first record that my sister and I used to play, most at Scotland, and it was a march called King Cotton by Sousa.
Oh, yes.
And we used to march up and down the drive at Birk Hall to it with a few cousins.
Singing at the tops of your voices?
Absolutely, the tops of our voices.
Right, let's hear King Cotton. Who would you like to play it?
Well, the Marine Band, if possible, please.
Well, here it is, conducted by Lieutenant Colonel Sir Vivian Dunn.
Yeah, well, that'll be very nice indeed, because he's my childhood hero.
Really?
Well, you see, whenever the Queen goes in the yacht, she still takes the Marine Band, and
yes.
Of course there's always a director of music, and it's usually the senior one, and he was the senior one for a great number of years.
Sousa's King Cotton by the band of Her Majesty's Royal Marines. Now, you were born in the Scottish home of your mother's parents at Glamis Castle. No heir so close to the succession had been born in Scotland for very many years. Charles I, I believe, wasn't it?
Yes, I think he was. The only one of our family who've been born in Scotland, not so very much lately, really, was Queen Victoria Eugenie of Spain, who was Queen Victoria's granddaughter. Her mother was Princess Beatrice, who was the youngest daughter of Queen Victoria. And Princess Beatrice was, so to speak, kept at home, and so she moved about with the court, and the court happened to be at Balmoral when the baby was born.
Yes. Well, she was fairly well down the line of succession.
Oh, I should have said so, being the child of the ninth child.
Where was the family home in London when you were a child?
At 145 Piccadilly.
Oh, of course. It's now a road, alas.
Yes, it's where the road comes through by that hotel.
And from...
It got a direct hit in the wall.
And at weekends?
Then we went to Royal Lodge.
At Windsor?
In Windsor Great Park.
What's your earliest memory as a child?
in my pram, I think, being told not to push my pram up and down by moving about in it, in the garden of my sister's little Welsh cottage at Royal Lodge, and after a little while I succeeded in tipping up the pram and was rescued, screaming loudly.
That little Welsh cottage played a big part in your childhood. It was really a huge doll's house, wasn't it?
Yes, it's about, inside, it's about 4 foot high, so that it was perfect for children to stand up in, not so very comfortable for grown-ups.
Is it still in use somewhere?
Oh, very much so. My daughter is now custodian of it.
Well, going back to early memories, can you remember the pageantry of the Jubilee of your grandfather, King George V?
No, not really. I suppose I remember from old photographs that I was there.
He died the following year. Do you remember him well? You would have been, what, four?
Five. No, I don't really remember him at all.
You joined your sister in lessons by a governess. Did you miss the company of other children? Did you feel that you were being left out of a great deal of companionship?
Well, no, because my sister and I were very close. Although she's nearly 5 years older than me, we never did lessons together. We always did lessons separately. But then, of course, we had quite a lot of children who came to the guides, for instance, when we had a choir we used to sing in, and there was the pantomimes we used to do, you know.
Yes.
And yes. Dancing class. You know, one saw quite a lot of one's age group.
Do you remember theatre outings as a child?
Yes, but of course they were very rare because my childhood was spent at Windsor with the bombing and everything, you know. You didn't go to London.
Which did you enjoy more, London or the country? Did you look upon yourself as a country girl?
Very much so, yes.
Ponies?
Oh, yes.
Let's have your second record.
Lived
what shall we
once have? Ponies. I would like Scotland the Brave, please. I hope that it's recorded by the pipes and drums of my regiment, the Royal Highland Fusiliers.
Scotland the Brave by the band of the Royal Highland Fusiliers, your own Glasgow and Ayrshire regiment. Did your early education include some rather unusual subjects like protocol?
No, I don't think it did really, because I think one was brought up to be able to talk to anybody, and my father, of course, never had much protocol, and certainly not in the war, and the Prime Minister or Archbishop or somebody like that were friends. They came in very seldom, of course, being at Windsor.
There wasn't that great formality of state occasions or anything.
Oh, no,
like that.
None.
And later, did you study constitutional history?
No, I didn't. My sister did.
All history, of course, must have been made more interesting for you when illustrated by family portraits and relics and that sort of thing.
Well, yes, it would have been, but they weren't there, you see. An awful lot were taken away.
During the war?
Yes. They were all in hiding and carefully preserved.
Well, much of your life has been spent in historic buildings. Do you have a strong sense of the past?
Oh, yes, tremendously. But I think that came later, you know, when the beautiful things came back, the heritage things came back from being preserved in the war.
Mm-hmm.
One was given a sort of eye-opener of all the beautiful pictures and furniture and china, well, you know, all the things that were hidden, really, and it hit one at a very good age of about 15, when one's eyes are rather waiting to be opened yes. to the beauties of life.
What was the occasion of the first ceremonial you saw?
I think my grandfather's jubilee.
Yes.
But as I said, I don't remember that very well. I can remember my father's coronation better.
That must have been a very long ceremony.
Yes, it was, because, of course, it was twice as long as the Queen's coronation, because my mother was crowned as well.
When your father ascended the throne, as His Majesty King George VI, there must have been a sudden and confusing change in lifestyle for a little girl of six.
Yes, it was very surprising. My first impression was of having to leave home and go to Buckingham Palace, which we didn't know very well, and battling through these enormous, loving crowds that were surrounding my father and mother. I think they were greatly relieved to have somebody who they could depend on again.
Yes. And Buckingham Palace itself must be a very daunting place from its sheer size.
Well, no. Buckingham Palace is a very cosy house. We were put into the rooms which are nearly always the nursery, and the Queen's children have been brought up in the same apartment.
Yes.
It's quite high up, and looking over the Victoria Memorial, so one could see the changing of the guard mm-hmm. every day and all that sort of thing.
So you didn't have to get lost in the state apartments?
Oh, no, because that's the other side of the palace to where we live.
You mentioned earlier on that you and your sister formed your own company of girl guides.
Yes. Well, I think my mother did, actually.
How many of them were you?
I can't remember. We must have been about 20 each, I suppose, 20 in the girl guides and 20 in the brownies, of which mm-hmm. I was a part.
Now, what happened to you when war broke out?
Well, first we were left in Scotland, at Balmoral, because, of course, when the war was declared, nobody knew whether the Nazis wouldn't bomb us all to pieces. So we were left in safety in Scotland, hoping they wouldn't bomb us there. And then we came down about Christmas time, and then we went to Royal Lodge, which was in the park, as I've told you, the Windsor Great Park. And then suddenly we were asked to pack and move to Windsor.
To the castle.
To the castle, when the Nazis invaded Belgium and Holland, because they were getting rather close. And we packed for the weekend and stayed for 5 years.
For security reasons, was your life greatly circumscribed?
Well, yes, during the bombing, of course, we weren't allowed to go very far from the house in case there was an air raid. And the usual sort of pathetic attempt to defend the castle of those days happened. You know, I mean, they dug trenches and put up some rather feeble barbed wire. And the feeble barbed wire, of course, wouldn't have kept anybody out, but it kept us in rather more, because there were only a few holes in it, so to speak, where they could get through.
Yes.
So in a way, that was a little bit circumscribing.
Will you tell me about those famous pantomimes which took place in the castle? I believe they were your idea, weren't they?
No, they were my father's.
Mm-hmm.
They were written by the local schoolmaster in Windsor Great Park School.
Where did you perform them?
In the Waterloo Chamber.
And so you could have a very big audience?
Oh, yes, about 600.
Those were what? Troops and people on
yes,
the stage?
Yes, mostly, yes. And everybody round about.
Were you always principal girl?
Yes, I was, except for once, when I went on strike and thought somebody else should do it.
But it's a plum part. Didn't you like it?
Well, I think I was a little self-effacing, and I thought I was perhaps sort of hogging it a bit.
How many pantomimes were there?
Four.
And you played them what, for a week?
Oh, no, 4 days. We were all at school, you see, really.
Yes. It must have been great fun.
Hmm.
It said that on VE night, Victory in Europe night, you were outside Buckingham Palace in the crowd, joining
yes,
in the
were.
Peace celebration.
Yes, indeed we were.
Were you disguised in any way?
No, it was most exciting. We went out with a party of friends. Of course, they were all in uniform then, including my sister, who was in the ATS. And we went everywhere. We rushed down the street. We had an uncle with us, my mother's brother, who was very jolly and gay, encouraged us to behave very badly, as usual. And we came back to the palace, and we found that we just missed the king and queen out on the balcony, and so we got rather bored waiting, and I'm very sorry to tell you that we sent somebody in to tell them that we were outside and would they please come out, which was a very long walk, I can tell you, for them to come to.
Nowadays, to what extent do you find you can move about without being recognised? Can you slip out and do a little shopping ordinarily?
Oh, yes. It depends if one's been photographed or appeared in the paper or been on the television.
Let's have your third record. What's that to be?
Well, this was a record that I remember cheering me up very much. You know, traffic jam. And everybody was in the traffic jam. We were all listening to the wireless, and it had this wonderful tune called 16 Tons by Tennessee Ernie Ford. And instead of everybody looking absolute daggers at each other like everybody does, everybody was banging in rhythm on their steering wheels, and we all caught each other's eye and laughed.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
16 Tons by Tennessee Ernie Ford. When did you carry out your first solo public engagement? Do you remember what it was?
When I was 12.
As early as that?
Yes. I went to present the school prizes at the Princess Margaret School in Windsor.
Were you very nervous?
I felt dreadfully sick, yes.
Well, the first of so very many. I have a list here of your presidencies and patronages of various welfare organisations and children's societies, a very long list, scores of them, and they must all be visited, of course.
Yes, they must all be taken an interest in. I'm president of quite a few rather important national ones, of course, like the NSPCC, the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. My sister was president before me, and I'm very sorry to be able to tell you that it's got very much worse, the cruelty to children.
Yes. And, of course, you are now president of the Girl Guide.
Yes, I took over from my aunt, Princess Royal.
And you're colonel-in-chief of several regiments?
Yes, three.
Now, someone with a taste for figures has listed about 170 engagements you'll fulfil in a year. Does that seem reasonably right?
Well, I don't think I've ever counted.
Well, somebody has.
That seems to keep pretty busy.
It seems a lot of work. You have your own office staff, which arranges all the details.
Oh, yes. I couldn't do without them.
How far ahead do you make up your diary?
About 6 months, I think. If you do it any further ahead, of course, it may have to be put off or postponed, because one might have to go abroad,
mm-hmm.
or something else might happen.
You're usually accompanied on an engagement by a lady-in-waiting. Are they appointed by yourself from among your personal friends?
Yes, not particularly personal friends. Some of them are appointed because they're suitable.
Mm-hmm.
And they are perhaps a friend of a friend who, you know, has recommended them.
And they are concerned in some way, that they're knowledgeable about the kind of organisations that you're going to?
Well, they learn.
Right, we got to number four.
May I have, please, a small portion of Brahms's Symphony Number 2?
Why do you choose this one?
I think it's the most beautiful tune in the world. In fact, it's beautiful all through, but I know we can only have a little bit of it.
Afraid so. And which recording have you chosen?
Toscanini, please.
Thank you.
part of the first movement of the Brahms Second Symphony, Arturo Toscanini conducting the NBC Symphony Orchestra. Now, as well as those many engagements in the United Kingdom, you undertake overseas tours, two or three in a year sometimes.
Yes.
The schedule of some of them looks daunting.
Yes, they are very busy, but then, of course, if one visits abroad, there isn't very much time for doing anything else than being there, if you know what I mean. Well, I must say, people have got very kind nowadays. They do give one a little time off in the middle of it. Because otherwise one gets stale, tired, you know.
When Her Majesty is abroad, you're one of the councillors of state who act in her place. Is this a permanent appointment, or is a council arranged afresh for each absence?
Oh, it's arranged afresh for each absence. We have letters patent, and there are always four of us, the four senior members of the family, whoever is available. And we act in pairs, and it's really a form of regency.
Why in pairs?
It was declared to be so. There were always two that acted. Like, two of us have to sign all the papers, and two of us have to receive the people in audience on behalf of the Queen.
Are the powers of the Council as complete as those of the Queen?
No, they aren't. I could read you out a list, but I don't think it would be very interesting.
Right, we'll leave it there and move on to your next record.
Well, as we've been thinking of things rather to do with this country, I should like Rule Britannia, please.
And how would you like it?
I would like a recording, please, of the last night of the proms, with the people joining in and sounding very patriotic, which is very important nowadays.
Britannia sung at the last night of the proms, Sir Colin Davis conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra, Elizabeth Bainbridge as soloist, and lots of promenaders joining in the chorus. Ma'am, you take a very active interest in arts organisations. You're president of the Royal Ballet. Dancing has always delighted you.
Yes, I've always loved the ballet, and from a long time ago I've had something to do with it, with the school, and then when it was at Sadler's Wells.
Which ballets give you the greatest pleasure? Classical?
Yes, I think the classical ones nearly always do. I suppose because of the music.
Mm-hmm.
Music with the dancing is a sort of integral part of it, isn't it? And if the music is bad or non-existent or ugly, I find that it takes away from the dancing.
And you're a very regular theatre-goer. All sorts of theatre?
Yes, all sorts of theatre, but I really like the ballet best.
You were concerned with a charity performance of a thriller some years ago in London. Did you enjoy that?
Yes, very much.
What was your particular job?
I helped the producer keep the cast in order.
Successfully, I trust.
Yes, they were mostly friends of mine.
You have a gift for mimicry, you're a good musician, you love dancing. In other circumstances, do you think you would have been a performer?
No, I don't think so. I wasn't any good at any of them. I mean, you're kind enough to say that I'm a good mimic, but I can't actually mimic people very well. There are other members of my family who are better at that. And I'm not a very good musician. I can strum on the piano a little bit for other people to sing to. I never did any dancing other than ballroom dancing. So I don't think I would have been accepted at an audition.
Well, let's have another record. What, number six?
Well, as I am such a keen ballet-goer, may I have a bit out of Swan Lake, please?
Of course. Which bit?
Well, I think the conductor calls it number 13, Waltz, second act.
An excerpt from Swan Lake, Tchaikovsky's ballet music, the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by André Previn. About your two teenage children, ma'am, what's your son, David, Lord Linley, studying?
He's at Parnham in Dorset, studying to be a cabinet maker.
That is something he's been taking to since early
yes,
life,
he's very good with his hands. He's also quite good at electronics, and he also likes engines.
Uh-huh.
I think it's either schizophrenic or very balanced.
And your daughter, Lady Sarah, has she started undertaking public engagements yet?
Oh, no. Neither of them will, you see. They're not part of the royal family.
Few people have suffered more than you from wild and inaccurate and irresponsible press stories, especially in foreign papers. Can you laugh at them, or do you find them aggravating?
I find them extremely aggravating. Of course, if they're absolutely invented, like sometimes they are, of course one can laugh at them with one's friends. But I think since the age of 17 I've been misreported and misrepresented.
A lot of it is beneath contempt, and of course you can't keep on issuing denials.
Well, they're not worth denying, really, because they're usually inaccurate.
Well, let's get back to music. What's record number 7?
Well, this is a record, quite an old record, I think, about 1948, when I was a young thing and quite enjoying life, called Rock, 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 by Carl Ravazza and Sid Phillips and his band, and long before what we know as rock.
Same old stuff, it's just a knocked out thing that started in Kansas City. When you rock, 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 this is all you've got to do. You rock, rock, rock it out and rock it. Then you take some jive, put it in your pocket. But if you don't like it, don't you knock it, cause rocking is a thing to do.
Carl Ravazza singing Rock, Rock, Rock with Sid Phillips and his band. Now, the practical problems of survival on the island. You've made many visits to the tropics. You've visited many islands. Any deserted ones?
Yes.
What sort of shelter would you build?
Well, I think it depended what sort of stuff there would be to build it with.
You've got palm trees and undergrowth and...
Well, then I think palm fronds and, yes, that would do very well.
And what would you eat? Are you a good fisherman?
Not bad, if I had something to fish with.
Would you plan to escape?
Oh, yes. I like life too much to live on a desert island.
Do you know anything about sailing, navigation?
No, I've never done that, although I was in the Sea Rangers, I'm ashamed to tell you.
Well, nevertheless, we'll do what we can to get you rescued very quickly. Your last record, number 8.
I'd like the hymn, Guide Me, O Thy Great Redeemer, Cymronda, sung by the Pendarus Mel Choir.
In Welsh?
Yes, please.
Amen.
Guide Me, O Thou Great Redeemer, by the Banderas Male Choir. If you were allowed to take only one disc out of that eight, which would it be?
I would take the Swan Lake. I could imagine the scene.
And dance yourself on the island, of course.
Yes, with no one else to look, I'd probably be beautiful.
You may choose one luxury, any one object, which would give you pleasure to have with you, but which is of no practical use.
I think I'd take a piano.
Yes, of course. And one book, apart from the obvious choices of the Bible and the works of Shakespeare.
I should like War and Peace.
A good long read.
A good long read, and rather needs reading several times, so that'll keep me going for a long time.
I should think it would. And thank you, Your Royal Highness, for letting us hear your Desert Island discs.
Thank you, too.
Goodbye, everyone.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For more podcasts, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.